Hello again, friends. Welcome to another edition of the Locked On Panthers podcast brought to you by our friends at Pepsi. Hey, this football season will be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day no matter how you watch this season. Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through game day and become a member of the League of Football Watchers. These passionate fans are the real generational talent that Pepsi fuels. Because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game, it's made for those who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watching. Go to madeforfootballwatching.com to check out the latest football watching content from Pepsi. What's going on, friends? Billy Rossetti with you guys here. It is Crossover Thursday. It is another exciting time here. Another great talk. It's myself and Lauren Cox coming at you for getting some good talk on both the Panthers and the Bears. So a lot of good stuff to get into there in a little bit, but obviously some big news coming Wednesday from the Panthers, and it's very unfortunate news in regards to the injury front, and that is that K'Juan Short, for the second year in a row, will be out for the rest of the season with shoulder surgery. Last season, of course, he had that partially torn rotator cuff that limited him. You know, he ended up only playing the first two games of the season and missed the last 14. This time around, he will be out for the remaining 11 games of the season. He, of course, had already missed two games with that foot injury, and now he'll miss the final 11. So, unfortunately, this means in two seasons, K'Juan Short will have played a total of five games. And, obviously, of course, he didn't even finish Sunday's game. He suffered that injury in the third quarter against the Falcons on one of his hits on Matt Ryan. So, really unfortunate, and, you know, age and now health history is obviously starting to become a factor for K'Juan Short. And we, of course, talked about K'Juan Short a little bit earlier this offseason in regards to could he be a potential salary cap casualty in 2021. Keep in mind, of course, that we know the salary cap is going to be short, or is going to be a lot lesser than it was projected to be because of COVID and, you know, the lack of revenue that's coming in. So if we look at K'Juan Short's contract, and we're using over the cap here, so in 2021, he is due a $12.5 million salary. He's got a prorated bonus of a little over $6.3 million, because remember, they adjusted his contract a little bit in 2019, so it added some signing bonus money from his original contract in 17, and he's got a per game roster bonus of $1.5 million and a workout bonus of $500,000. So his total cap number is set to be almost $21 million. And then technically, you know, the contract ran up until 2023, but the contract is going to void in February of 2022, actually. So just a couple days after Super Bowl 56. So really, 2021 is basically K'Juan Short's contract year. And if the Panthers wanted to move on from him next offseason, they would leave about $11 million in dead money. But they would create about $9.8 million in salary cap space. So they've got a pretty big decision lying ahead when it comes to K'Juan Short. He's going to be 32 years old. He'll now be coming off two shoulder surgeries in the last two seasons, playing a grand total of five games out of a possible 32. So this is a big decision coming with K'Juan Short, who, you know, had been one of the key pieces of this Panthers defensive line, but obviously he's been slowed up a little bit because of these injuries. And you just invested a first round pick in Derrick Brown. You also invested a sixth round pick in Bravion Roy, and Bravion Roy certainly is going to get more playing time because of this. Zach Kerr, of course, is going to be the starter now in place of Short. But Bravion Roy, you're going to see a lot more of him, I think. So you really invested some draft capital this year into the defensive line position, both, of course, tackle and end. And obviously, these guys are on pretty cheap contracts. So it would not be surprising at all if the Carolina Panthers cut K'Wan Short after this offseason. Because, again, I mean, that $9.8 million, when you, again, talk about the fact, too, that the overall salary cap for every team is obviously going to be a lot lighter than it was originally expected to be because of COVID. So, you know, looking at the cap calculator right now, if we're using a projected salary cap of $176 million for the Panthers right now, that would currently give them about $17.3 million in salary cap space. And K'Wan Short is actually right now set to be the second highest cap hit on the Carolina Panthers at, again, almost $21 million. The highest cap hit next season, not surprisingly, is going to be Teddy Bridgewater at $23 million with a $17 million base salary. $10 million of that is guaranteed. So obviously Bridgewater's not going anywhere. But K'Wan Short, you know, with only $17 million in cap space and the ability to save about $9.8 million with cutting him, that's got to weigh pretty heavily, I think, on this Panthers organization. I mean, you use the calculator and you cut Short, you're looking now at about $27 million in cap space. And you've obviously got a couple of players that are coming up that you want to look at in terms of contract extensions, namely first, Taylor Moton, because Taylor Moton is going to be a free agent after the season. And do they try to keep guys like Mike Davis or, obviously Russell Okung will be interesting. Curtis Samuel is going to be another guy that is coming up as a free agent, and they'll have a big decision on him. Chris Reed has taken over that left guard position. What do they do with him? So there's going to be a lot of decisions now to make financially for this Carolina Panthers team. And unfortunately, you know, it's not a guarantee now that K'Wan Short is going to be the future or in the future plans of this team because of the high cap number, because of the injury, you know, the new injury history. It would not be surprising to me at this point if K'Wan Short becomes a free agent, if they let him become free agent in 2021. So that's just the quick news to start the day. Obviously, you know, of course, not the greatest of news that Short is done for the season. Again, we certainly wish him well, but, you know, the train moves on. Like I said, Bravion Roy and Zach Kerr, they're going to get more playing time, and the defense will be, you know, still pretty solid, I think. But we'll see Sunday against the Bears and David Montgomery. And speaking of the Bears, you know, we're closing in here on Crossover Thursday with myself and Lauren Cox, giving you some great insight on the Chicago Bears and his thoughts on how the Bears actually look as a 4-1 team. So we'll get into that in a minute. But before we get into that, of course, I want to thank our great sponsors over at Pepsi, good friends of ours. Hey, thanks to a lack of natural athleticism or commitment or overbearing sports parents, fewer than 1% of 1% of 1% of people will ever play professional football. But instead of entering the NFL, they've joined another league, the League of Football Watchers. This football season will be different, and Pepsi's here to get you ready for game day no matter how you watch. So Pepsi is the refreshment that you need to power through any game day. Because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game, it's made for those who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watching, and remember to check out madeforfootballwatching.com to check out the latest football watching content from Pepsi. So thanks to Pepsi, and thanks to you guys for always showing your support. And so, Without further ado, let's jump right into Crossover Thursday. Another great one. It's myself. It's Lauren Cox getting ready for the Panthers and the Chicago Bears.
So, Bill, this Carolina Panthers team has been, I think, one of the more interesting stories in the NFL this season that hasn't gotten a lot of attention, which I imagine the Panthers don't mind at this point. But given, I kind of want to start bigger picture here, they start 0-2, they won three in a row since. What changed? Like, what was going wrong early on? Is it quality of opponent? Have they figured something out? Why have they been able to go from bad to good?
Yeah, man, I think it's just like, you know, the confidence level just seems to be kind of building, right? You know, we knew the Panthers were going to be a rebuilding team going into this season, and they kind of showed right out of the gate, you know, in the season opener against the Raiders, that this team is going to compete. They've already kind of bought into that winning attitude from Matt Rhule, you know, that he brought over from Baylor and Temple, and, you know, just building that confidence, I think, and allowing the offense to really kind of expand a little bit more. Like it's really weird. Obviously, the winning streak has happened ever since Christian McCaffrey went down to injury. Now, I don't want to say that's been, like, you know, the sole factor that the Panthers have won three straight, but, you know, they've been able to really open up the offense, it seems like, a little bit more, and really get a lot of the receivers, especially obviously Anderson and DJ Moore. But Mike Davis has been a really nice key help as well too. You know, he's really helped keep that offense afloat here. So I think it's just more the confidence building has been extremely, continually rising over these last couple of weeks. You know, there's obviously still some issues. Run defense is still the biggest question mark, I think, right now. But, you know, they've patched up some areas that were a question mark going in. Like, you know, Chris Reed has kind of taken control now of that left guard spot and has played really well the last couple of weeks. And Rasul Douglas has been kind of that unsung hero at the opposite cornerback position, along with Dante Jackson. So they've gotten some good contribution from some far from household names, to say the least. So, you know, I think it's a combination of kind of all that has really helped the Panthers kind of get their mojo going, so to speak, these last couple of weeks.
Yeah, since you mentioned Mike Davis, I want to go there because it's a little bit of a sore spot for Chicago Bears fans. He was a free agent acquisition of theirs a couple years ago. They released him during last season to kind of iron out the compensatory pick formula. They ended up getting a fourth-round pick because they released him and how that all worked out. But Panthers lose Christian McCaffrey. Everyone thinks, oh, no, end of the, you know, that's their big offensive piece, the guy they're paying all this money to. How good has Mike Davis been for the Bears fans who might not be familiar, and why do you think it's working so well?
I think, you know, Joe Brady has just done a really nice job of getting him open in space and having a lot of the playmakers that the Panthers have had too. I think has been a big factor, because opposing defense obviously really can't focus on these. You know, they really can't focus on Mike Davis because they've got to respect all these receivers, because the Panthers have been loving to spread the field open too, right? I mean, you're seeing a lot of three, four, even five wide receiver sets, a lot of empty formations. So the defense has to respect everything that I think the Panthers are able to attack with, if you know what I mean. So Mike Davis has had a lot of, you know, a little bit of open field, I think, to work with, and he's been running the ball pretty well. And I mean, he has what, like almost 30 catches over these last four games, and really not even four full games, because he didn't come in really till about the fourth quarter of that Tampa Bay game in week two. But like I said earlier, Mike Davis has really helped the Panthers not skip a beat on offense, and it's been, you know, pleasantly surprising. But Mike Davis also had himself a really nice training camp and really took a hold of that number two job. And so, you know, this team had all the confidence in the world, I think, of running with Mike Davis as the starting back, and, you know, really didn't waver when Christian McCaffrey went down. Now, when McCaffrey does come back, I'm going to be really intrigued to see how they utilize both of these backs now, because Mike Davis now has also obviously shown that the Panthers can give Christian McCaffrey a little bit of rest here and there. He doesn't have to play you know, 95 to 100% of the snaps anymore, that, you know, can cut back down a little bit because Mike Davis now has the confidence and the Panthers have the confidence that the offense is going to be just fine with Mike Davis getting a good bit of the work here. So, you know, Christian McCaffrey may not be the number one running back each week from here on out. He'll certainly be a very solid option, but Mike Davis certainly will not be forgotten about anytime soon, even when McCaffrey comes back.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think there's a lot of room for this Panthers offense to even get better than we're seeing so far.
Yeah, absolutely.
So when it comes to Teddy Bridgewater, he was a name that the Bears were linked to at least somewhat during the offseason. It seems like he's had a very efficient, fairly effective start to the season through the first five games. I know there were some bumps along the way, especially early on, but given what he's been able to do this season, how much of that do you give credit to Joe Brady and a fairly innovative and effective offensive scheme, like you kind of touched on, spreading it out a little bit more and trying to make it easier, versus Bridgewater himself making good plays? Like, how much of this has been, I guess, I don't want to say simplified, but, you know, how much of this has truly been on Bridgewater's shoulders to have to elevate, and how much of this has been scheme success?
Yeah, I would definitely say it's a mix of the two. Absolutely. I think you brought up some real good points there. And, you know, I'm going to point out a article by a good friend of both of ours, of course, Mark Schofield over at Touchdown Wire, who really kind of got that conversation going, I think, too. Even back in week one, I think he posted this article about how the Panthers were using a lot of empty formations and a lot of, you know, spread formations to help out Teddy Bridgewater. So it's definitely, I think, a lot of scheme, because there's obviously that familiarity from when these two were together in New Orleans. But on the flip side, I think you have to give Teddy Bridgewater credit for taking care of the football, right? I mean, he's only turned the ball over, I think, like three times this season. He only has three interceptions, and the Panthers really haven't fumbled the ball. They have something, I think, like a plus three turnover differential right now. So that, to me, has been one of the key battle, or the key stats that have been so huge in these last three wins here, is that the Panthers are not turning the ball over, and Teddy Bridgewater has been a great example of that. And I think he's playing more than just a game manager. And, you know, he's obviously not using his legs, which we expect. He did have a rushing touchdown a couple weeks ago, but he's still really not that mobile quarterback. But we kind of knew that going in. But they're letting him work in the quick game. You know, he's getting a lot of quick passes to Mike Davis and letting guys like Anderson and more kind of work in the middle of the field. But he's not afraid to take a deep shot every once in a while as well, especially to Robbie Anderson. I mean, Anderson right now is fourth in the league in receiving yards. So, you know, right now that contract looks to be really, really good. I mean, we remember Robbie Anderson had to wait about a week after free agency started before he finally got his money, probably took a lesser contract than he thought he was going to get. And now it's looking like a bargain for the Panthers. So the Panthers have done a really nice job of surrounding Teddy with the talent that he needed to succeed in this offense. But again, I go back to the fact that Teddy's taking care of the football. He's not really forcing anything. He's not really making any stupid mistakes. And then again, that with, you know, as you said, Joe Brady and his scheme, I think have both done a really nice job collectively that have helped the Panthers, as I said before, gain that confidence to help them carry forward. And now they're looking like a legitimate team. Like, you know, the Panthers have arrived a lot sooner than a lot of us could have imagined going into this year.
Yeah, it seems like they got some good value. It seems like they got some good value on defense too. With, you know, I think as I look over that group, it's not loaded with household names. It's loaded with a lot of guys I recognize from like recent drafts. It's like, oh yeah, those are some solid players. But it's not like it's loaded with guys with decorated Pro Bowl careers. And I'm curious if you could give me a little bit of a breakdown on how this works with their safeties and linebackers, with versatile guys like Trey Boston and Jeremy Chinn and even Justin Burris on the back end there. You match them up with athletic linebacker like Shaq Thompson, and even Tahir Whitehead seems like he still has some stuff left in the tank. What are they doing? I mean, it seems like it's a fairly creative rotation there that might not be as readily familiar to a lot of non-Panthers fans.
Yeah. So I'll start with Jeremy Chinn because Jeremy Chinn was one of my huge favorites, you know, one of my draft crushes throughout this draft process. And we saw him at the Senior Bowl and talked to him a little bit at the Combine. And Jeremy Chinn is kind of like that, you know, Tyrann Mathieu type player, or what a lot of, you know, I guess we could say what Cardinals fans kind of hoped Deion Buchanan was going to be, you know, if that makes sense. That that strong hybrid, you know, Sam linebacker, safety type player. That's really how the Panthers are moving him. But he just flies around the field, right? And I mean, he's leading the team in tackles right now. So it's not like he's just out there kind of, you know, learning the ropes and, you know, taking his rookie bumps. He's already one of the leaders of this defense, and I think he's something like tied for seventh in the league in tackles right now. So, and I said earlier this week on the podcast, we have to take a serious look right now at Jeremy Chinn as defensive rookie of the year, with how he has helped kind of revitalize this defense, which has obviously been a huge question mark the last couple of years, especially in the back seven. He's been a huge reason of, you know, getting that back up there. So yeah, like you said, the Panthers are almost playing with three safeties on every play because of Trey Boston, who's still playing well. And then Justin Burris. I mean, Justin Burris had that huge interception last week against the Falcons, where the Falcons are in the red zone ready to tie the game, and Justin Burris just completely switched the momentum and you know, really made up for not being able to pick up that loose football early in the game. You know, he was going for the scoop and score, which is understandable. Couldn't come up with it cleanly, and the Falcons were able to recover, but he more than made up for it with that interception. And then, you know, you mentioned the other linebackers too. Shaq Thompson, second in the team in tackles, just continues to be an absolute force. And yeah, Tyre Whitehead, I mean, obviously no one's really going to replicate Luke Kuechly. We all know that. He's a one of a kind player. But Tyre Whitehead's always been a solid linebacker, right? You know, we saw him play well when he was with the Raiders. We saw him play well when he was with the Lions. He's just that solid veteran linebacker that's kind of, you know, manning the ship here and, you know, getting his nose into the football. So he's been a solid addition as well. So he's really helped kind of plug the hole as best he can that was obviously left behind by Luke Kuechly. And then I mentioned earlier the cornerbacks. I mean, look, Rasul Douglas has been a pleasant surprise. You know, Eagles fans that might be listening to this certainly know how frustrating Rasul Douglas had been at times while he was with the Eagles. He never really lived up to the potential that, you know, the Eagles fans or even maybe the Eagles organization had for him. And that's why he ended up as one of the final cuts this season, along with Sidney Jones. Panthers claim him, and all of a sudden he's thrust into starting action because Eli Apple's banged up and goes on IR to start the season. Dante Jackson leaves that game against the Raiders early with that foot injury. So you're looking at Rasul Douglas now and Troy Pride as your two corners there in week one. And Rasul Douglas, you know, his he's fitting really well, I think, in that cover three scheme. So he's been, you know, his coverage skills have been pretty good. He's been kind of sticking to receivers, sticking his nose in, making tackles. And now he's solidified himself as one of the starters. I mean, he played every single snap. He's pretty much playing every single snap now from that point on. And I know last week he played every snap against the Falcons. So if we're talking kind of unsung heroes, like you mentioned, Justin Burris, and then like I said, Rasul Douglas has been a really an incredible addition and one of the more kind of underrated adds in really any free agency move or waiver wire move, especially for the Panthers here.
It seems like the one area this defense has struggled is stopping the run, which is where the Bears are definitely struggling offensively to move the ball in the ground game. What do you think the reason has been? I think the Panthers are near the bottom of the league in terms of rushing yards and yards per carry allowed. What has been the issue there, and how much more difficult does that become with Kawan Short's season-ending injury?
Yeah, that's another brutal blow, and it's really unfortunate that happened. But, you know, it's I think that's the point where, you know, the youth movement is kind of they're still working their way through that, right? I mean, you've got a lot of new faces on this defensive line. I mean, you've got two rookies playing significant time at the defensive tackle position in, of course, obviously, seventh overall pick, Derek Brown, and then their sixth round pick, Bravion Roy, who should get even more playing time because of the short injury. You're going to see Zach Kerr in there a lot as well. Kerr is probably going to get the start, but you're going to see Roy mix in there quite a bit as well. So it's still a lot of youth getting in there. And then even at the DNs, you've got another rookie there in Yito Gross-Matos. Brian Burns is now banged up a little bit. He suffered a bit of a head injury on Sunday, so we'll see what his status is for this week. So it's just a lot of players, I think, kind of learning on the fly. So that I would say that's the biggest issue. So, you know, these kids are still developing, and eventually I think this is going to turn into a really nice defensive line unit. But these guys are still kind of learning the tricks of the trade. Derek Brown has flashed a little bit, though, over these first five games. He's had his ups and downs, which, you know, we expect, especially with the pressure we put on for a seventh overall pick. But he's been fine, I think, these first couple games. We're obviously not really going to start to see what he's capable of, because he's probably going to be expected to play quite a bit. You know, the Panthers have done a nice job of rotating a lot of these D-line guys so far. But now, you know, a guy like Derek Brown is obviously going to have to step up even more, because now that depth is depleted a little bit. Now they might go out and, you know, grab some D tackles or whatever the case may be. But your three main guys right now, two of them are rookies and one of them is a free agent that you brought over from the Cardinals. So really going to be intrigued to see how they handle this Chicago run offense. And I talked on Wednesday on my show. You know, Chicago, obviously, as your listeners know, they've got some really strong guys in the middle. You know, I'm a big fan of James Daniels. I like Cody Whitehair there in the middle. So these guys will get after the Panthers. So this Panthers D-line really has to be ready to play, I think, if they're going to win this game. So, you know, this could be one of those games where, you know, the numbers, you know, don't let the numbers fool you. The Bears can, you know, they could push this Panthers team around if this Panthers team isn't careful.
Yeah, it still seems like it's an exciting time to be a Carolina Panthers fan, definitely ascending on the way up. Bill, I appreciate you taking the time to tell us a little bit more about them and participate, as always, in these fun Crossover Thursday podcasts.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's always good chatting to you, buddy. You're one of my favorites here on the network. Always good to talk to you. Before we flip things around, I want to remind you guys, too, that today's episode is being brought to you by our friends at rockauto.com, which is great because it's the online family business serving auto parts customers for over 20 years, and you don't even need a membership or an account login. You can just go right in and check out all the parts available for your car or truck, and depending on the brands, the specifications, the prices, it's all available to you. Very easy to navigate. They have everything you could think of, from engine control modules, brake parts, tail lamps, new carpet, anything you might need for your new car. Rock Auto has got you covered. And their prices are always reliably low, whether you're a professional driver or a do-it-yourselfer, a daily driver, whatever the case may be, they will take care of you price-wise. So you don't have to worry about paying twice as much and worrying about only certain brands and specifications at your local auto shop. Rock Auto has got you covered. So go to rockauto.com right now and check out all the parts available for your car or truck. And remember to write the words "Locked On" in their "How Did You Hear About Us" section so that they know that we sent you. It's amazing selection, it's reliably low prices, and it's all the parts your car will ever need at rockauto.com. Flipping things around here, Crossover Thursday, Locked On Panthers, Locked On Bears, Bill Rossetti, Lauren Cox with you here. We're going to talk Chicago Bears here, and of course, always good to talk to my buddy Lauren, good friend of mine. And, you know, Lauren, this Bears team, they're quite the interesting bunch. And one of the things I kind of saw on social media, and, you know, especially on Twitter, the last couple of days, has been the notion that this Bears team at 4-1 is kind of a fool's gold type deal, if you know what I mean. So explain to the listeners how the Bears got to 4-1, and, you know, whether you think this is a legitimate 4-1 or 4-1 record, or if this team still needs to, you know, has some proving to do to some people.
Yeah, they definitely still have some proving to do. There's no doubt from in my mind of that. So to that regard, they're not a 4-1 quality team, but that doesn't necessarily mean they weren't better than the four teams they beat. And that's kind of the weird distinction here. Like, they had a very light and easy start to their schedule. Like, it was the Lions, the Giants, and the Falcons weeks 1, 2, and 3, when they won all those games, albeit they were a little bit more difficult than they should be. But on paper, the Bears should have been able to beat all three of those teams. So, like, they deserved to be 3-0 because they were the better team in all three of those contests. But the first one against the Lions required a 16-point fourth-quarter comeback. Then they did the exact same thing against the Atlanta Falcons. End of the fourth quarter, scored 3 touchdowns to win that game, and struggled a little bit more against the Giants than they should have. Then they lost to the Colts and Phillip Rivers in a tough one, kind of back and forth there. And then this last week was kind of they're trying to prove their quality, because they beat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, which, you know, Tom Brady and the Bucs have had a few step backs here and there, but it was the best game we had seen thus far from Nick Foles in just his second start with the Chicago Bears. It was among the best this Bears defense had looked for much of the season, and it was the closest thing to, like, okay, this is what the Bears are supposed to look like. And I know the Panthers were able to beat the Buccaneers earlier in the season, so it doesn't necessarily tell you a lot about where these two teams are heading into this matchup necessarily, but, like, there's something there. The Bears aren't completely unproven at this point. The Buccaneers game started to prove something, but they're not necessarily 4-1, you know, one of the best teams in the NFL good at this point. But they're somewhat like the Panthers in that regard. They're still kind of coming together, too. They're not a new coaching staff. They're not a brand new, you know, they're not as young, per se, as the Panthers are. But with Nick Foles coming in the fourth quarter of that Falcons game, at the end of the third game of the season, he's only had 2 starts, and one of those starts was a quick turnaround for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So he's still getting on the same page as his receivers, the same page as his coaching staff and play calling. And so there's been a little bit of an adjustment period in that, but still think this team needs to prove that it can be better.
And kind of speaking of the quarterbacks, obviously we know Mitchell Trubisky started and played those first couple games, but then got benched at halftime of week 3 against the Falcons. So what do you think eventually led to that benching? Because I don't even think he had really all those bad numbers, especially in that Falcons game. But what do you think led to that benching, and what has changed since Nick Foles has taken over, and where do you think this offense can go now with Nick Foles once, you know, as you said, they start to, all these units start to come together?
So this offseason, when the Bears traded for Nick Foles, of course they said it was an open competition, but the belief was that it's started a clock, a countdown of when Mitch Trubisky would be benched. It wasn't a question of if Mitch Trubisky would be benched. It was a matter of how long would he get before he got benched, and that proved to be 2 games and 3 quarters. And even though he was undefeated, he's actually he was the only NFC North quarterback to have won his last 4 games to start this season. He has not been able to execute the offense at a high level. He still has trouble reading coverages and going through progressions and doing some of the simple things to be an accurate NFL quarterback. And it's eventually Matt Nagy just kind of, I mean, he hasn't said this, but the interpretation is that he was just frustrated with not having an NFL caliber, I guess, brain under center. He can make all the throws. He's a good athlete. He can do a lot of things that are impressive at the quarterback spot, but even a miraculous comeback against the Lions and a win against the Giants were not enough for him to keep his job, because we've seen Nick Foles come in, albeit a slow transition at this point. We still haven't seen the best of Nick Foles yet in this offense, but it's clear how much more football intelligence there is. And I don't want to call Mitch Trubisky dumb, because he's not a dumb person. It's just being able to be that cerebral, you know, Peyton Manning style of, like, understand everything that's happening at the line of scrimmage, get all the players in the right spots, know what the defense is going to do before they do it, and know exactly where you need to go with the ball. Nick Foles has been decisive. He's been intelligent. He's been changing plays at the line of scrimmage a little bit more, and always seeming to know, for the most part, where to go with the ball. There's been some timing issues with his receivers. He's missed some easy open throws that he really shouldn't, because he expects a guy to get there sooner than he does, or he throws the wrong route because they weren't quite on the same page. And it's like some of those self-inflicted mistakes they still need to iron out before this offense will truly be at its potential. But it's clear the Bears are getting rid of the ball more quickly. They're not taking a lot of like big plays. It's a lot of dink and dunk underneath easy stuff. So they're not a team that's necessarily built to score quickly. But if you leave them enough time, they've shown multiple times this season that they can pull a comeback. And Nick Foles, just like Mitch, has a lot of that clutch gene running through him.
Absolutely good. You know, I agree. I really like the way Foles has played. You know, I kind of thought he's been a little erratic at times too, but you know, he's definitely made some nice throws, and I'm excited to see what he can do, like you said, once everything starts to come together. But I also, you know, watched a little bit of that Bears Bucks game last night, Tuesday night. And one thing that kind of struck me was the I guess we'll say lack of usage, for, you know, for lack of a better term, on Anthony Miller. Obviously, Allen Robinson is the stud there, but you know, I see Anthony Miller in some limited action, and I go in and I see he's only playing about 50% of the snaps. Now, I know he had some bad drops. You know, shout out Aaron Freeman there for bringing that to my attention. Had some bad drops in the Falcons game. And you know, pretty much was out for most of that game. But why do you think the Bears have been limiting, you know, the work of Anthony Miller? And can we even say like limiting the potential of Anthony Miller?
It's been one of the big storylines of the season for sure. And I think there's a couple of factors that go into this. I mean, the drop passes and some of the mistakes are noticeable. I mean, he's had a couple easy ones that he really should have had, but that's something he did in college. It was kind of a known thing with him coming into the NFL, but everyone was sort of expecting this year to finally be the big breakout year, that he was going to take over as the true number two receiver behind Allen Robinson, and perhaps the quarterback play would be better and other things would be better, and this would be his year to look like a true number two wide receiver. But instead, from week one, there's a different receiver, a rookie fifth round pick, Darnell Mooney out of Tulane. Mm-hmm. Instantly stepped in and has been the Bears' second best receiver by a long shot. He has been phenomenal for, you know, for a fifth round pick. We got to put it in the right context there. He's not a 1,000-yard guy or anything, but mm-hmm. blown all expectations out of the water. Very clearly the true number two, a deep speed threat who's been adding some different route running skills and separation. Like, he's been surprising more in those areas that we didn't see as much of that from him in college. And so like now he's the number two receiver, and Anthony Miller's been bumped to number three. And the issue in terms of playing time is just that Miller's always been primarily a slot receiver, and for whatever reason, the Bears don't seem to want to play him outside at all. So then now, as they've tried to do a more tight end heavy offense with Jimmy Graham and Cole Kmet, if you don't have three wide receivers on the field, Anthony Miller isn't usually one of them, because if you have two outside receivers, it's going to be Robinson and Mooney, and they just haven't liked Miller outside. The change we saw last week a little bit against the Buccaneers is that Miller was getting even less playing time because they were bringing in Javon Wims more on the outside and playing Allen Robinson more in the slot. So it seems like he's in some doghouse a little bit here and there and hasn't been able to fully climb out of it yet, in some part because of his own mistakes, in some part because other players on the roster have been playing better, and in some part because they've switched up the offensive scheme a little bit more to have fewer wide receivers on the field and more of the running back, tight end, heavy personnel.
Yeah, I kind of noticed that too, watching them a little bit last week. I mean, I'm even seeing some 13 personnel. I'm thinking you don't see that too often in the NFL, but it was really neat to see, like, you know, some three tight end sets out there. Cole Kmet, I mean, there were a couple plays that I thought he, you know, really flash some speed. I know he's not playing a lot, but, you know, it's understandable for a rookie tight end. We really don't see those type of players make immediate impacts, but I think he's been flashing a little bit. But where has Jimmy Graham come from? I mean, I've been calling him the ghost of Jimmy Graham that is, you know, risen from the dead. And I mean, four touchdowns in five games. What has changed in Jimmy Graham? Or, you know, is it just he's finally in a good scheme fit? I mean, this is really the best we've seen Jimmy Graham play since he was in New Orleans. So what has been, you know, the big change for Jimmy Graham? And then with Cole Kmet, you know, with what you've seen in the first five games, what can you project him to be in this Bears offense going forward?
Yeah, so Jimmy Graham has been the ultimate red zone weapon in particular. Like, between the 20s, the Bears haven't got nearly the tight end production that they would like, given the turnover and investment they've made at that spot. Like, a second-round pick on Cole Kmet, like you've been talking about, Graham was kind of their big free agent signing. They also brought in Demetrius Harris from the Cleveland Browns, who has some experience with Matt Nagy back in Kansas City. So it was, like, supposed to be back to a tight end-heavy offense. And we've been seeing them on the field more, but the receiving production hasn't necessarily quite been there, except for Jimmy Graham's big touchdowns. And it's just been masterful one-on-one, post up a little cornerback in the end zone. They'll just line up Jimmy out wide by himself, and it's kind of one of those things where it's like you're watching from home, and you're like, oh, I know where this is going. And coaches, you know the coaches and the players all know where it's going, and yet somehow, some way, they haven't really figured out how to stop it. They just kind of trust their cornerback one-on-one with Jimmy Graham, and he just boxes him out like a power forward in the NBA and jumps up and makes the catch. And some of them have been very impressive catches, and it's been good ball placement by the quarterback, but his primary threat has been red zone more than anything, and that's kind of been the case for all of the tight ends. Cole Kmet has been a work in progress, which is to be expected for rookie tight ends. You know, nowadays, they just don't tend to be super productive in their rookie seasons. He's essentially their number three. I would characterize Demetrius Harris as more truly their number two tight end, and I think so far the playing time reflects that. But Matt Nagy keeps insisting, like, hey, we got to get Cole Kmet on the field more. He needs more playing time. Like, he had 15 snaps against the Colts, and Matt Nagy's direct quote was, 15 is not enough. We got to get him on the field more. So they got him on the field more against the Buccaneers, and he had, I think, one target and one holding penalty and did some run blocking, but, like, more playing time hasn't equated to any more production from him. So the Bears still want more from that spot, but for now it's mostly a red zone weapon. But we kind of, in Chicago, we all keep kind of waiting for them to unveil more of that and make the tight end more of a focal point of the passing game.
I want to flip on the defense now a little bit too. And I think the first question that comes to mind is, how much is this defense missing Eddie Goldman?
It's noticeable, right? I mean, they've been struggling to stop the run all season. And I mean, of course, if they had Eddie Goldman, they would be better in that regard. But I also think they have gotten some better than expected play from their reserve defensive linemen. And I also think the bigger issue, I don't know if bigger is the right word, but a bigger than expected issue in the run defense has been poor play from both inside linebackers. Danny Trevathan has been having arguably the worst season of his career up to this point. All of a sudden, he looks like an old man out of nowhere. Last season, he had some injuries, but was otherwise spry and young and fresh. And this year, he just looks slow and like the game has already passed him. Both he and Roquan Smith are coming off of their best game against the Buccaneers, so there's some hope that maybe they started turning a corner for whatever reason. But even Roquan, you know, this is year three for him. It's like time for him to step up and be a big Pro Bowl caliber inside linebacker, a top 10 pick. And again, Buccaneers was his best effort yet, but for the first few games of the season, it's missed tackles, it's missed assignments. You know, he's attacking the wrong gaps in run defense, or overshooting gaps, or overrunning and taking poor angles. And it's just a bunch of those little things that, like, he should be past at this point in his career. And so I don't want to completely bury Roquan coming off of a stronger performance against the Buccaneers, but there's some concern there about how quickly his development is coming along. But as far as the run defense goes, I blame them more than I blame the defensive linemen. But having Eddie Goldman out there, of course, would make a huge difference.
And I'm glad you brought up the linebackers too, because I made a note of them. You know, I saw Trevathan against the Bucs. I thought he looked really good. But I, you know, didn't realize that he had been kind of rough those first three games. So I'm really glad you brought that up. But I was with you on Roquan Smith. I thought he was, you know, a little inconsistent at times as well. And, you know, yeah, obviously it's surprising, like you talked about. He's, you know, this is his third year. He's a former first round pick. So these are really the times where you think he's got to step up. But the defensive line, I mean, you know, Khalil Mack obviously is still there. But it's obviously, I'm sure, been huge now that Akeem Hicks is back and healthy. You know, I know both of them have 3.5 sacks. Some of their backup D tackles, you know, they were obviously forced into a lot more playing time last season. Personally, I ended up watching a lot of Roy Robertson Harris for the Scouting Academy over the summer. And, you know, actually didn't think he was all that bad. Now, I know he's getting limited time again this season, but that's understandable because I know most of his time really came because of the injury to Akeem Hicks. But how much has Akeem Hicks being healthy this season helped change the game for the Bears D-line?
Oh, it's a huge. I mean, it's one of the primary reasons why they struggled so much last season. What was his injury and his absence? Like, he's more important even than Eddie Goldman. I mean, Goldman was around last season, and there's a noticeable difference when it's Hicks that's in and not Goldman. He's just so consistent, and the penetration that he's able to get. You know, like, he hasn't had the big sack numbers yet this season, but he creates enough disruption. I mean, he's at 3.5 sacks, which is pretty good for him, but I mean, it's not like he's been dominating, game-changing the way that Khalil Mack sometimes is, but like, Hicks gets that penetration in that B gap so consistently, especially he's faced some inexperienced right guards that he's just terrorized. And it's not Aaron Donald level, but it's enough that teams have to pay attention to him, and it's he gets those one-on-one blocks because Khalil Mack is taking so much attention, usually on the same side as he is. So there's like the tackle and the tight end and the running back are all going to Khalil Mack, and then it's just the right guard one-on-one with Akeem Hicks is a very strong formula for the Bears' success. But then you add in Robert Quinn this year on the opposite side has taken some more of that attention away, and they've gotten some pretty good production from Brent Urban and Mario Edwards Jr. Just this last couple of games have started to step up a little bit more as far as rotational guys up front on that defensive line. But Akeem Hicks is the emotional leader there, the vocal leader, and the sort of model of consistency that they all look up to. And he brings a lot of that energy in these stadiums that have no fans. I mean, he gets this defensive line hyped up. He's talking smack, and he's just so smart, too. I mean, he is sort of the, as good as Khalil Mack is, Akeem Hicks is so valuable to this. I mean, I don't want to say more valuable, but like, it's a different kind of value that definitely gets overlooked. So I'm glad you asked about him.
One last I want to get to you real quick before we wrap this up here. I just want to get your quick thoughts, too, on the cornerback position. You know, Jalon Johnson's been getting more playing time. I see the rookie out of Utah, and then Kyle Fuller opposite him. How have they been playing? You know, what's Jalon Johnson like? I know someone actually mentioned to me on Twitter that Kyle Fuller has been getting targeted a little bit more because I thought Jalon Johnson might be picked on a little bit. But you know, what are your thoughts so far on these corners, and you know, so what can the Panthers fans expect with their receivers against the Bears corners?
Yeah, so Kyle Fuller always plays a lot of off coverage, and so typically most seasons he's among the league leaders in targets. But actually, this I just pulled up the numbers. He and Jalon Johnson have equally tied with 34 targets thus far this season. You would think that they might go after Johnson a little bit more as the rookie, and to some extent they have more than like last year with Prince and Mukamara. You would see a much bigger shift, imbalance of those target numbers where Fuller would get a lot more and Prince Mukamara tended to not get very many. But Jalon Johnson has been very impressive in their eyes from the start. I mean, starting from week one as a rookie second round pick, he's been everything they could ask for and more. A very intelligent, smart, like a savvy veteran as a rookie. I mean, being able to kind of handle most receivers downfield. I mean, he had a decent gauntlet with Marvin Jones in week one. He had Calvin Ridley. The Bears have Riley Ridley, his brother, but Calvin Ridley with the Falcons in week three. Not that it was shadow coverage all game long, but he was able to pretty well hold his own. The Bears benefited in both of those games with Kenny Galladay and Julio Jones being injured, so they didn't have those dual threats at all times. But even in those one-on-one matchups, Jalon Johnson pretty consistent in being able to hold up down the field, more of a physical press man-to-man cornerback. A couple of times he's gotten beat on double moves and hasn't always been a completion, so like there's some vulnerability there where he tries to be physical and tries to be aggressive and is still learning exactly when and where he can win those matchups and when and where he can be aggressive. But otherwise, it's been the same old Kyle Fuller opposite him, making some plays, making some turnovers, both interceptions, and last week he had a big hit that forced a fumble that was textbook how you play hard-hitting football in 2020 without being penalized. Let the guy make the catch, then deliver the boomstick and force the fumble. He's growing into a little bit more of a leadership role as well, so the Bears feel very good about both of those guys and where they are right now. I think they're even a little bit weaker in the slot with Buster Skrien. I'm not super confident in him. He's not a huge weakness, but of the three, for me, he's the bigger weakness at the cornerback spot.
Awesome. Great stuff, Lauren. So really appreciate you jumping on with me here to talk about the Bears. As always, you know, always great chatting with you, buddy. You're one of my favorites here on the show. So always great to spend time with you, man.
Hey, appreciate it. And I'm sure hopefully by January, things will be a little bit more clear to get back down to the Senior Bowl as we do every year. But Veets might be a little bit different this year if we all have to wear masks or something.
Listen, if that's what it's going to take, I'm all for it, man. I'm definitely hoping we get to be in Mobile, and I'm definitely hoping to see you down there, buddy.
Hey, you too.
So a special shout out to Lauren Cox, great buddy of mine. Really appreciate getting a chance to talk to him again. And yeah, hopefully we get a chance to see each other down in Mobile. Hopefully things start to settle down a little bit and they'll be able to let us fly down there and check out the new crop of draft picks for 2021. Because it's looking like a really good crew, as we've talked a little bit about before. So really excited to get a chance to start grinding into these guys, and again, hopefully get a chance to be in Mobile to see everybody. But thank you guys, as always, for tuning in. Really appreciate all the support, as always. Really hope you enjoyed this crossover episode. We'll be back tomorrow to wrap up the week and get you some final thoughts and get you ready for Sunday's big game between the Carolina Panthers and the Chicago Bears. So until next time, Billy Rossetti signing off. Have a great rest of your Thursday. We'll see you Friday right here on LOP. Until then, take care, my friends. We'll see you soon.